Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. This show is heard on WBCQ, The Planet, every Monday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and it's rebroadcast. I think it's usually on Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also hear this show on Podomatic.com. Just punch in Camp Constitution, and these shows will pop up. We usually upload the shows as soon as we can, usually after a few days after they're aired. And we also, you can also visit our YouTube channel, Camp Constitution, and find many of our radio shows archived, as well as other activities, our classes at our family camp, and activities around the year. It is brought to you by Camp Constitution, which, among all things, runs a week-long family camp. We have a speakers bureau, a publishing arm, a radio show, and many other things. So visit our website, campconstitution.net. This year's camp is coming right up, August 5th to the 11th. This is the week-long camp in the Berkshires of Massachusetts. And you can get information by visiting our website. Also, we have a weekend camp in central coastal Maine, September 14th to the 16th, and you can contact us for that. We have a guest on the line. I want to welcome Dan Woese. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. W-O-S. Woese?
Yeah, it's close. It's Dan Woese. How are you, Hal?
Woese. Oh, good. I'm very well, thank you. Well, I got I had a privilege of meeting you at the 5th annual Flag Day Second Amendment rally in Belchertown, but my good friend Ed Clemens told me he had heard you speak a little bit before that up by your neck of the woods. So Dan, I read your bio. It says that you collect Corvettes, you're a musician, and I said that at one point you were not in favor of the right to keep bear arms. So and before that, I want to also mention that Dan is the author of two books, Good Guns, Bad Guys 1, and you have a second part 2, Good Guns, Bad Guys part 2.
That's correct. Yes, Good Gun, Bad Guy 1 and 2 it's been a huge success so far. I've been really happy with the response that I've been getting from the books. And yes, I am I have an infatuation with Corvettes. I can't help it.
How many do you own?
Well, right now I only have a few, but I've had probably over 20, 25 of them.
Oh, over the course of time, right.
Yeah.
Well, they're a nice-looking car, I tell you. I had time, I'd tell you my sad 68 Mercedes-Benz story, but I won't go into that for some other time. But anyway, I was reading the bio. It said that at one point you were not necessarily in favor of the right to keep their arms. Is that true?
Well, that's true. I like to say, you know, there was a certain time in my life when I was hanging with the wrong crowd, and it wasn't people doing drugs. It wasn't people robbing banks. It was liberal anti-gunners. Mm. And what happens is, you know, when you surround yourself we ultimately are a product of our environment, and we have to be very careful who we hang out with and what information we take in, because a lot of it, you know, on the anti-gun side of the conversation, it's a lot of fake propaganda rhetoric and just misleading information. And unfortunately, I got caught up in some of that stuff when I was in my 20s. But the good news is my dad took me out hunting and target shooting when I was a kid, so I had familiarity with guns. So I knew logically that they weren't these dangerous, scary things that, mm-hmm. that the left wanted me to believe. So eventually logic took over, and logic prevailed over the angry rhetoric from the anti-gun side. So ultimately I developed a solid pro-gun stance. And not to mention, I'll mention real quickly, I also had an incident in my life where I was felt like I was unable to protect myself and my wife in this one particular situation, which I talk about in the book. And it was in that moment that I had a moment of clarity and realized how important it is, and the responsibility I have as a man, as a husband, as a father, to protect myself and my family. So in that moment, everything changed for me.
That's interesting. I know that everybody has an epiphany. In some cases, it's just the argument is the logical argument. I think a lot of the people in who are anti-gun, anti-really self-defense is really a better word to put it. It's based on an emotional argument. They see some terrible carnage. They see five people shot at a news, newspaper headquarters, or some students, and they say, "Oh my goodness, it's those terrible guns. If they weren't so available, this would never happen. If we had more laws, this would never happen." And you point out to these folks, well, wait a minute now, guns were a whole lot more available 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. And I give a few personal experiences. When I got out of the Army in 1980, I live in Boston, Massachusetts, not exactly a bastion of conservatism, and hasn't been. Right. And I went to the police headquarters in downtown Boston and applied for my permit. And a few days later, I got it, no problem. And I went to the downtown Boston Woolworths, and they had a nice big gun case. And I bought myself a Ruger's 22 rifle, and I don't know, 200 or 300 rounds of ammunition. And it's a 10-round magazine, not a clip, but a magazine.
Right.
And I went on the subway, and of course I didn't lock and load and walk down the street with it, but I put it in a bag and went on my way. I didn't shoot anybody. And that 22 rifle, it's been used. I still have it. My son uses it. I use it on occasions. And it hasn't never in all the years it's been here, it's actually right by my bed here at my home, it's never jumped out and shot anybody or shot. And we used to live across the street from a school. It never
wait
jumped
a minute.
Out and shot.
I thought guns were violent.
That's right.
How did your gun not shoot anybody?
I don't know. It's probably anesthetized or something like that. Maybe. I don't know.
Well, it's a great story because what happened, within the past, I don't know how many, 10, 20 years, is the anti-gun radicals have really been working hard at changing the narrative. And one thing that they do, well, actually two things they do. They use fear and hate. The two emotions that they will use against people. They will use people's own fear and hate to work in their favor to support their anti-gun agenda. They will keep people as fearful as possible of guns. This is because they don't want them going to the range. They don't want them learning. They don't want people to get the real truth and the real knowledge about guns because the truth is, once they go to the range, even if you're an anti-gunner, once you go spend a day at the range, you leave with a smile on your face. You had the greatest time in the world. And
exactly,
it's undeniable. And anti-gunners, it happens all the time, but the radicals don't want that to happen. So they will use every tactic they can to keep people scared of guns, which is why they use all their propaganda and rhetoric. And I go into all that stuff in detail in my book. Another thing that they'll use is they'll use anger and hatred. They will help people develop anger and hatred toward gun owners.
Pro-gun organizations, too.
Exactly, and that's a great point because that's part of it, too. When I say gun owners, I mean gun owners and the NRA and Gun Owners of America and, Second Amendment Foundation, all these
JPFO.
Groups.
Yeah.
Exactly. So and what they do is they want people who don't know any better to believe that gun owners are recklessly and intentionally putting everyone in danger. And it couldn't be further from the truth.
Lots of money, too, at it, right?
Yeah, because typically people on the left who don't like guns don't like capitalism.
They use that one as well.
And or at least they don't like people having their own money. So they like to take that from people who have money and give it to people who don't. Which is a terrible, terrible habit to get into. But anyway, that's another whole story. So
it's interesting. A fresh story is that right in the smoke hadn't cleared yet in this newspaper office in Maryland, and already it was Trump's rhetoric that brought to this, not Maxine Waters' rhetoric. It's Trump's rhetoric. Then they discovered, this guy had a beef with this paper since 2011. It's not something that, I'm a Trumpite. I'm going to go out and shoot liberals or shoot a newspaper, fake news. Nothing like that. He had a personal gripe. Sadly, he was obviously, I don't know this, because sometimes we jump to conclusions. We might say automatically this guy was probably on a psychotropic. Don't know that for a fact, but usually that's the case. And I've never heard any of these anti-gun types say, let's blame it on Big Pharma. They have no trouble blaming the addiction problem on Big Pharma, which in some cases they're correct. But when it comes to all of the shootings in the schools, the fellow in the church down in Texas, and many others, I think the fellow in Las Vegas, all the, you know, that there's always been some type of psychotropic drug that these people are under influence, which in some cases causes these types of angry, violent outbursts.
Yeah, it's a real thing, and it's starting to come to the surface now. And we're starting to see a little bit more and more people talking about pharmaceutical drugs and how they affect the way people act in our society. You know, not only people who are on them, but what happens when they get off them, whether they get off them accidentally or on purpose or whatever. It's a huge topic, and it's very in-depth, and I'm waiting now for our society to kind of become more aware of that. It's going to be a big thing, and I feel like it's starting to that story is starting to break a little bit.
That's the important. We can't expect the corporate media to break this story, but it's folks like you and what we do at Camp Constitution and all the good folks that were at this rally, all the different organizations, Oath Keepers, and many, many others, that it's our job. And what with enough of us doing this, the mass media can't ignore it for too long. Well, let's talk about your two books. You mentioned some specific instances of where these people are, these anti-Second Amendment, anti-gun. And by the way, I always like to point out that every state constitution, all 50 states, has strong wording when it comes to the right to keep and bear arms. So we shouldn't just say Second Amendment, because let's face it, the Second Amendment didn't give us that right. We already had that before there was a Second Amendment. And then if you look at all the state constitutions, in some cases, I think it's Pennsylvania, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be questioned. I mean, how strong can you get? So give us some examples, and who is behind this, the different organizations and individuals who are behind the out-and-out lies.
Well, one of the things I talk about is the difference between rights and privileges, and people who are behind it are typically the media, on the front lines anyway, is the media, because what they're trying to do is make people blur the definitions of rights and privileges. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again on your show, a privilege is something that is given and can be taken away. Privileges can also be used as a form of leverage. If you want somebody to do something, you can offer them a certain privilege, or you can take that privilege away. A right cannot be taken away. A right is inherent or God-given. It's part of being human. You can't take that away. You can violate someone's rights.
Right. It's the duty of the government to protect those rights, whether or not the agents in those governments like that right or not. It's their duty.
That's right. And you can also, you can uphold that right or you can violate it. And in our Bill of Rights, it clearly states, you know, these are rights being laid out for the government to recognize that these are the rights of the people, and don't mistake that. So, but what happens in society, our media and the politicians who want control tend to convince people that, well, rights aren't really rights. They're more like privileges. Mm-hmm. And this is why we have people who can say with a straight face, I support your right to keep and bear arms, but I think we need common sense gun restrictions. Mm-hmm. And I always say, you can't do both those two things. You can't support my right to keep and bear while simultaneously restricting my right to keep and bear. But people are saying this because they believe it. They don't see the difference. They see rights as privileges.
Mm-hmm. Something that's bestowed. And, of course, the word common sense. Well, all the gun owners I know are very common, sensible people. And they act in accordance with common sense when it comes to their handguns or their rifles. They don't put a rifle on a handgun where the little five-year-old can get to it unless he's training him how to use it. And then there are a lot of little young people that have learned this type of range discipline in respect of that gun at a very young age. So I don't see the average gun owner, just throwing the gun in the back in the front seat of the car. It goes for run to the store for something. There's a loaded gun around the wrong people. They use common sense. I remember shooting. I was in Ohio, and we went to this fellow's farm, and he had a range on his farm, and we were having a great time. And there was serious range discipline. Nobody's drinking. I mean, they could have opened a few beers. They don't do that. And then the state police came by, and he says, what a culture this is. The state police says, hey, Lester, man, how long you got boys be shooting? I get off in an hour, So yeah. The state policeman looks at these guys as their friends and allies, not enemies, you see. So I said, oh, what a world, what a different culture from the Northeast, at least, in this big cities.
Well, you mentioned, we talked about common sense, and the reason they put that word, that term common sense in there is to guilt people, gun owners, to go along with whatever, law or restriction or regulation they're pushing that particular month, whether it's bump stocks or whatever.
Gun show loopholes,
back, whatever universal background checks, whatever they're talking about, magazine capacities, they'll use common sense, because who doesn't want to be seen as having common sense? I mean, we all want to think that we have common sense, and we don't want to be seen viewed otherwise. So they'll use common sense as leverage over good people to get them to conform to whatever it is that they're saying is common sense. So it's just a form of leverage. In other words, it would be common sense to restrict our magazine capacity to 7 rounds. Well, geez, if I go against that and say, hell no, it makes no sense to me, and it doesn't solve any problems. If I say that, their goal is to make me look like I don't have common sense because I didn't go along with whatever they're pushing. That's the dirty part of their propaganda and of their strategies and their tactics. And that's just one of many little strategies that they'll use. And like I said, I lay a lot of that stuff out in the book and explain to people what it means when they say this and how it affects us psychologically, because these things have a psychological impact on people and changes the way, we think about guns, whether it's the term gun violence or assault weapon or Wild West or any of those crazy terms
Wild
that they
West,
like to use.
Yes.
Isn't that a great one?
I love the one about Wild West, because the Wild West wasn't nearly as wild as, the south side of Chicago on a given weekend. Because it was, Hollywood gives us this really an inaccurate depiction, historical depiction of the Wild West. A couple of gunmen come in town, and all the people run into their stores in fear, and then the sheriff has to show up, and he's corrupt, and then the cavalry has to come in. It didn't quite work that way. I forget, it was a gangster. Was it Bugsy Siegel? One of those gangsters. He ended up living in Israel or going to Israel, and he said something like, an armed society is a polite society. If you're living out in the Wild West, you probably are pretty proficient with that firearm. And I might be quick on the draw, but 2 or 3, you're gonna hit me. So I don't know how influential. There may have been some examples of that, but it was relatively, there wasn't a lot of guns shooting going. In fact, you'll see some of these movies where the sheriff comes in and takes the guns from the people, and you get the guns when you leave town, if you recall some of those. So they were gun-free zones, right?
Well, they want you to think that there're going to be shootouts, in the produce section in the grocery store. An armed society is a polite society, and manners are good when one may have to back up his axe with his life. That was a Robert Heinlein quote. An armed society is a polite society has meaning there, and when the bad guy knows that the good guy can take care of himself, he's less likely to act out in a bad way and create destruction and hurt people. Go ahead.
I mentioned this. I interviewed a gentleman just a few last week on the subject, similar topic, and James Jagger, whom I think you met.
Yes.
And I this is I don't know if there's a clear-cut statistic, although I'd love to see. It'd probably take a while to compile. But if you took out, they say that, you know, we're the most, or one of the top murder capital of the world, which is not the case, but we're, what on a scale of 1 to 10, we're somewhere there. And but if you were to take out certain cities like Los Angeles, Detroit, Washington, D.C., Chicago, New York, if you took those numbers off the statistic chart, we'd be one of the safest countries in the world.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll give you the statistics exactly. There are approximately 30,000 gun-related deaths in the country. Now, you got to keep in mind, 19,500 of those are suicide. And there are about 4,500 of those are law enforcement related, which means good guys killing bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
A very small portion, 900, are accidental discharge. And only 5,100 are actually homicides. Okay, so you take those 5,100 homicides, and you can find 25% of those in four cities across this country. And those cities are Chicago, Baltimore, Detroit, and Washington, D.C.
That's
so
incredible.
Yeah, it really is. It really is incredible that four cities make up 25% of our homicides.
And there's also something. Does the name Jeff Cooper sound familiar to you?
Yes.
You probably have some of his writings. He had something called the Good Riddance Factor, and that's where mafiosos knock each other off, or the gangbangers shoot each other.
Yep.
And, well, it's too bad that these people make the wrong choice in their lives and engage in this life. But when one rival gang shoots another rival gang, to me, it's a good riddance factor, you know?
Yeah. I know what you're saying.
And that
it
must
sense.
Be a certain percentage, of the good riddance factor also factored into those homicides. Now, as far as these mass shootings are concerned, a mass shooting is it identified as four or more people?
Not anymore.
It's now
three or more, as per Obama's executive order on that. He changed that from four to three. And you have to ask yourself, well, why would he do that?
To justify more, you know. And
yeah.
So would a mass shooting, if it was a gang-related and, you know, there were more than two, three casualties, would that be considered a mass shooting?
No, I think that that gang-related is disqualified from mass shooting.
Mass shooting, okay.
Yeah, and
yeah.
I could find that statistic for you. I could find the fact, but I'm pretty sure on that, if I remember correctly.
Now, with your research, what organizations outside of the, I use the term corporate media or kept media, outside of the corporate media and some of the more odious spokesmen that we see on CNN and what have you, what organizations are leading the charge to disarm the American people?
Well, there are groups called Every Town. I call them Crazy Town. And there's another group, Moms Demand Action. Bloomberg funded both these groups. And
uh-huh.
I like to call them Moms Demand, Demanding Moms. So we have Demanding Moms and Crazy Town. And they are private groups funded by Bloomberg. And their goal is to make people as fearful of guns as possible and as angry at gun owners as they possibly can too. So their rhetoric and their propaganda is just over the top. And but it shows how irresponsible they are, because they get the facts wrong all the time. They just have one goal, and that's just to demonize guns and gun owners.
What was the Million Mom March? Was that supposed to be an anti so-called Million Mom March a few years ago? Was that an anti-Second Amendment march? I think that led to a group called Second Amendment Sisters, if I'm not mistaken, that was active for a while. And there are plenty of lady gun owners, and they tend to be excellent shots, and in many cases far better than the male counterparts.
Yeah. Well, I just spoke at an event at the Capitol in Washington, D.C. It was an event called the DC Project, and it was an event to celebrate female competitive shooters and the Second Amendment. So they asked me to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Dick Heller spoke, and then the ladies spoke, one from each of the 50 states. It was just a fantastic group. Yeah, it was great. It was called the DC Project, and I got to go to DC and be invited to something like that. It was just a real honor, and I get to see some of my friends that I never actually met in person. You know, I know a lot of people across the country in the gun conversation, and it was great to finally meet people from all over the country that I knew, but we finally got to hug or shake hands, and it was just a fantastic
experience. That's great. Yeah, network, you can't put a price on networking. When people will say, why do you want to go to this event? You're preaching to the choir. You got to pay $20 to, you know, so at least cover their cost. Because you're networking with people. I met you, you know, I got a chance to meet James,
Jaeger.
Producer. Yeah, Jaeger, whom I've known about, you know, and I heard about you, and that's what it's about. And, you know, we're not strong enough right now, but if we work together, we'll not only will be able to defeat gun control, but we will put an end to it, you know. So that's the importance of, and if you can't make it to an event, at least help out, you know. Help out that organization. Buy a book. You know, hey, I don't have a lot of money, but I can buy a book from the guy, you know, to at least to help cover it. And by the way, please, where can people get a copy of your book or books and anything else you have? I know you have a website, so where can they
Let me just mention that those connections are fantastic as well, because we have, you and I have connections that we didn't know about. People like Chris Ann Hall, friend of ours.
Oh, yes. That's right.
Camp Constitution and the Upstate Conservative group that I've been recently involved with, Ben Potiker and some of those guys.
And I'll be speaking there in a short while, in a couple of weeks.
Oh, you got to let me know. I'll be there.
July 10th, I think is when it is. This show might be airing, I think. This show will be airing right about the day before. So it will be Tuesday, July 10th, I'll be speaking, what is Camp Constitution? And our family camp is a whole lot closer than it was. It's only about place a little north, Boston's Bar, is where the meeting will be held. But it's a camp, the camp's about 50 miles, maybe a little more than an hour away. So I'm hoping to get some people, some families and young people involved in that area, which I'm familiar with, by the way. I know a lot of people out there. So anyway, so we got 3 minutes left. Let the listeners know where they can get a hold of you and your excellent books.
Well, my books are Good Gun, Bad Guy, Behind the Lies of the Anti-Gun Radical, where I talk about the strategies and tactics of anti-gunners and unveil and uncover a lot of their propaganda and their rhetoric, and I give people kind of an insight as to what's going on with the anti-gun radicals. Good Gun, Bad Guy 2, Destroying the Anti-Gun Narrative, is more talks about the media and how the media manipulates the conversation, the narrative, and the landscape, and it gives a lot of insightful views on what's really going on and how people are getting confused and conditioned to believe that guns are bad and gun owners are bad as well, which is none of it's true. But anyway, so I give the insight on that stuff. So Good Gun, Bad Guy and Good Gun, Bad Guy 2, you can go to goodgunbadguy.net or goodgunbadguy.com or search Good Gun, Bad Guy on Amazon.
All right, well, that's great. And I think we have our camp schedule is pretty full, but God willing, next year we'd like to have you as one of the instructors if you're available, and also probably host you. So we'll stay in touch, or maybe host during the course of the year, host a few of your speaking engagements here in New England, where they're at least in Massachusetts. I mean, Maine and New Hampshire and Vermont, they're a little more saner when it comes to the gun issue. So with that, folks, looks like our time is up. I want to thank you for listening. You've been listening to Camp Constitution Radio on WBCQ The Planet. And Dan, thanks a lot for being a guest, and we'll see you down the road. God bless.
Thanks so much, Al. We'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.